So we'll do verse number 46. Chapter 18, verse 46. Yatav pravrittir bhutanam. Yena sarvamidam tatam. Swakarmanatam abhyarchya. Siddhim vindati manavaha. So this is the verse number 46. So yata pravritti bhutanam. So yata means from where, pravritti means came, from where emerged, created bhutas, all beings, not only humans but animals, birds, plants, fish, we all came from that one creator, one God, one consciousness, Brahman, Ishvara. So everyone was created by that, even the inanimate, even the rocks and the stones and the, you know, mountains, and everything is created from that one consciousness. That's why they say even inanimate objects should be respected. You should take care of your shoes and your car and your things and your pencils. They should not be thrown. Everything is God. So we should respect even the inanimate objects. So yatav pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam, and everything is pervaded. Not only he creates everything, but he pervades everything. Like gold pervades all the ornaments, the ocean pervades all the waves and the bubbles and the you know, whatever, the puddles, everything is pervaded by the ocean. The mud pervades all the pots. So the Lord pervades us, every inch. That's why they say, na kan kan me Bhagwan. Every cell of my body is alive, is multiplying. I have 4 billion cells and they are all multiplying. How are they multiplying? Because of God's presence. How are they working in unison? You know, we find in a family even 4 people don't work happily together. We have fights. So imagine 4 billion cells. You know, they are all working without fighting, because all are taking, because they are all me. So they all work together. So that is so sarvam tatam. Everything is pervaded by him. Swakarmana tam abhyarchya. So by your activities, worship him. So do your activities as a worship of the Lord. When you do your activities as a worship of the Lord, you cannot be doing wrong. Right? How can I do anything wrong when I am worshiping God, when I am dedicating to God? So having done all his activities dedicated to Lord, Siddhim Vindati Manavaha, the human being, Manavaha, human being, reaches the highest. Siddhi means the highest, the goal of becoming one with God and becoming a realized soul, you can just do through the path of karma. So because all these paths lead you to the highest, the path of karma yoga, the path of bhakti, the path of knowledge, the path of meditation. But knowledge is considered to be superior to the path of service. Why? Because in work, you are still working. In knowledge, you understand that I am that. Ultimately, they all go together. See, a person who loves God will automatically serve him, will automatically want to know about him. A person who knows through the path of knowledge will want to serve God, will want to love God. So a person who loves God as bhakti will want to know who God is, will want to know how can I serve him. So all the three paths go together. So they are not watertight. It's not you can say, I am a karma yogi, I am a bhakta, I am a jnani. You have to be all three together. So siddhim vindati manavaha. Manav. So the mana, Gurudev explains, comes from the word mana. So if you consider yourself a human being, a manava, then you have to control your mind. Your mana has to be under the control of the intellect. Say, I get up in the morning, you know, I have decided I'm going to do some yoga and meditation, but I just fell asleep. It was too dark, you know, nowadays, or too this, or too that, too cold, too hot. I was supposed to go and do this service project, but I'm tired, you know, I went to bed late. Or I decided I should fast, you know, once a month on Ekadashi, and then you say, it's too hot, you know. So if you cannot control your mind, if your mind controls you, I don't feel like doing it. You know, we teach our children that, you know, what is right, you have to do. It doesn't matter whether you feel like it or not. Do what is right. So similarly, we have to tell ourselves that if there is something I should do, I must do it. I must not let my mind control my intellect. My thinking capacity should override what I feel like doing. So human being is one who has control of his mind. If you do not have control of your mind, then you might as well be a two-legged animal. That's what Swami Chinmayananda said. They said, if you decide something, do it. Otherwise, because animals, not to put animals down, but they work by instinct. You know, they just do what is feel like. But at least they have an excuse. They don't have an intellect. But you and I, once we have the intellect, we have no excuse. Do what is right. Do what you are supposed to do, irrespective of your feeling. Then only you can be called a manava. So, yata pravritti bhutana. So, that from whom all beings are created and all beings are pervaded. So, what is creation? So, I actually was in the Mundak Upanishad. It is explained very beautifully. Three very beautiful examples are given about creation, how the world came about, how it was created. And so, I thought I'll share that because that's interesting. They say, why did God create the world? How did he create the world? What was it? So in that, they have given three very beautiful examples. So the first example, I think I mentioned last week, is about a spider. Now the spider takes the web out of his mouth, you know, out of his saliva. And from his saliva, he creates this web, which looks exactly the same. Every thread of the saliva, there's no variety in it, right? The web is just different shapes put together, but it is all one colored thread. And from that, the whole web is created. So they say similarly from God, from Brahman, from himself, he created the whole universe. The spider doesn't take material from somewhere else and create the universe like you and I. If we were to make a web, we would have to get thread, you know, and then stitch it and tailor it and then make it, you know, if you want to make for Halloween or something. But a spider doesn't need that because he has it within him. So Brahman doesn't need anything else to create the universe. So he created, he or she or it, actually Brahman, again, God is not male. People always say, why is God male? God is not male. God is the energy. God is the substratum. It's neither male nor female. But they take different forms, you know, Krishna and Mother Goddess and, you know, Ganpati and so on. So different forms may be there, but the one Brahman consciousness is neither male nor female. So like, you know, Saraswati and Brahma and all those are there, but that is the manifestations of that. So actual Brahman is formless. So from Brahman came this whole universe. So that is the example of the spider and the thread and the web. But they say then spider has a motive, right? Why is he making the thread, the web? To catch insects. Secondly, it's all uniform, right? The threads all look alike. It's not that one. So what is Brahman's motive? Why did he create the universe? Just as the spider created a web to catch insects, does Brahman have any motive, any intention? They said no. Secondly, this is all uniform, right? The web, while the Brahman created this universe, huge variety. Plants are different and birds are different. Each leaf is different from another. Each snowflake is different. Each fingerprint, they say in 10,000 years or 20,000 years since humans have been on Earth, never a fingerprint has been duplicated. Even from the caves, they found 10,000, 20,000 year old fingerprints. There, nothing is similar to amazing. What, you know, intelligence. I mean, to, you know, they say no snowflake is different. I never knew that. They say no leaf is same from everybody. Each snowflake is different. So he has created this variety. So how can you say spider? It doesn't fit. They say, okay, you don't believe spider. Okay, I'll give you a second example. Second example is the earth. Now, how does the earth create? When she creates all these plants, does she have any motive? Does she have any intention? No, Mother Earth, that's why we call Earth Mother, because she gives without expecting anything. That's what the mother does. So she grows all these plants and birds, I mean, all these plants and, you know, flowers and fruits and vegetables without any motive, without getting anything back. The earth doesn't give anything, you know, it just freely shares herself So she has no motive. B, there is infinite variety, right? Plants are different, flowers are different, leaves are different. So the second creation is like the earth. So Brahman creates out of himself, creates infinite variety, has no motive, has no nothing to gain out of it. He had the creative ability, just as the earth has the fertility, so it creates plants. So similarly, Brahman had that creative ability, so he created the universe. They say, but wait, there's the third objection we have. So they say, what is the third objection you have? He says, well, the earth is inert. Earth doesn't have any life, but from inert, all these plants came out which have life. So how do you explain that? Is Brahman inert? Is he dead? He said, no. The third example they give is man and a beard, or man and hair, human being and hair, could be a woman's hair or a man's hair. So hair grow from our head. We are conscious, right? We have life, and hair grow from us. We don't make any effort, they just spontaneously grow. So from Brahman, who is alive, who is sentient, this whole universe was created, which is animate and inanimate, living and dead. Like from us also, the hair is inanimate, right? You can cut it. The barber cuts the hair, the hairdresser, we sit very calmly. You cut your nails, you don't feel anything. But suppose the same barber or hairdresser pokes your skin, then you go, oh, wow, why did you do that? Why don't you watch your scissor? So from the human being who is alive and sentient, both come out. The hair, which has no sentiency, and the skin, which has. So similarly, from Brahman, who is himself sentient, came both animate and inanimate objects. So these three examples together explain creation very beautifully. In one verse, the Rishi has given it just like that. In one verse, all the three examples. Such a profound truth. That's what the Upanishads were. They were so compact. Very few words were used and a lot of truth. That's why the student had to be very evolved to study that. So this is what the world is. This is how it was created. It came out of the Brahman. It has an infinite variety. Brahman has no motivation and himself is sentient, but creates things that are alive and that are insentient, both. So that Brahman pervades everything. And through your actions, you serve him. So what they say that a wise person constantly lives with that understanding, just as a true musician, a brilliant musician, cannot play a false note. You tell him to play and tell him to play a wrong note, he can't. You know why? Because for him, he's so entrained that he cannot play a false note. Or a poet, his writings always are perfect if he's a truly like Shakespeare. Every piece of his work is perfect. Look at Ravi Shankar. Every piece of music he has composed is perfect, whether it's Mozart or not. So similarly, a wise person always lives with that understanding. He cannot do wrong. Why? Because he's all the time thinking, I'm dedicating to the Lord. Lord is working through me. It's not I and mine, but the Lord is working. And with that understanding, when he works, then every action becomes pure. And I mentioned a nurse's aide because suppose if you ever been to a hospital or people say, I went to this hospital, and whom do they remember? They don't say, I thank the doctor or the nurse. There was one particular aide who was working the night shift. And she went out of her way to make sure I had the right pillow and the blanket and asked me whether I want water, filled my water cup. And she had so many patients, but treated each one. So such a person, again, I told you, she doesn't have to have a degree of an MD or anything like that. Just doing her job as a nurse's aide, but doing it with devotion, dedicating to the Lord, and constant. See, this is not only she's doing it for one patient, she's doing it for 20 patients. She's doing it night after night, night after night. Night shift is the worst. So all of you have encountered such people in your life. You go to a store and I went to Taco Bell the other day. There was this young black kid. My God, he was so lively, so friendly. He must have been hardly 18 or 20. So friendly. I stood there and I also ate my lunch there. I was there about half an hour, and every person who came in the line, so friendly, smiling, "How are you, sir? And what can I do for you?" And it's the same job. He's just working in Taco Bell, pay getting minimum wage. But every job he does it with that total dedication. That is what Sri Krishna says. It doesn't matter what you do, but do it with dedication to the Lord. And that is the essence of Karma Yoga, which we had studied in the third chapter and partly in the second chapter. That's why we said the 18th chapter is a summary. And what is Karma Yoga? Do my duty, do my best, dedicate to the Lord, do without I or mind, do without ego, do it unselfishly. And that is Karma Yoga. That is what the essence of the whole the Karma Yoga, Gita is supposed to be, one of the major factors, points in it is the service of the world. Through that you serve the Lord. That's why Raman Maharishi says, Ashtamurti Brit Deva Pujanam. You see the Lord in all the beings, and when you serve them, you are serving the Lord. Because each and every one of us has a mixture of negative and positive karmas that we are born with. A lot of vasanas and a lot of negative karmas. So through Karma Yoga, through right service, you are slowly exhausting your vasanas, you are reducing your negative karmas, and you are creating. It's like a bank. If you take money out, it becomes negative. After a while, your money is over. But if you keep adding, soon that money grows, multiplies, with compound interest and all. Nowadays, of course, you don't get any interest, it's 0.5%. But in the good old days, at least in India, you can still get 7% and all. So if you keep adding money in the account, you're soon you will have a good sum of money to retire. So similarly, in this life, I have to add in my karma bank. I don't take out. If I do negative, I take out. If I do wrong things, I take money out. If I do the right, I add a positive karma. Talking about wrong things, this man came, he was very stressed out. So his wife says, "Honey, why are you so stressed?" He said, "I have a lot of problems at work. I have a big problem at work. I have a big problem at work." So she says, "Honey, we are married. There is no such thing as your problem or my problem. It is our problem. Whatever is your problem is my problem. It is our problem. So tell me, what is our problem?" So he says, "Our secretary is pregnant from us." That is a problem, right? So doing actions with the ego create more vasanas. If you do actions which are selfish, dedicated just to me, myself, and those are vasanas, and those create sin. Sin again means where you are building up selfish vasanas, where you are doing just things for me, myself, things that are harmful. And we had talked last week, about motive and all that. So sinful activities are those that create more vasanas, and the more vasanas I have, the further I go away from God, because God is in us all as Om. So the vasanas are the tendency. So the goal of life is to do service, unselfish work dedicated to God. So I slowly reduce my vasanas. And Gurudev in his commentary always says that it is my vasanas that make me do selfish deeds, that stimulate my mind and make me do selfish. But if I reduce my vasanas, then what happens? My mind becomes quiet. It is no longer propelled outward, do this, get this. No, I'm content, I'm happy. So a content individual who has less vasanas is then able to sit quietly and meditate, able to sit quietly and remember God. Otherwise, we sit to meditate or we sit to pray, and our mind is running in 1,000 directions. What am I going to do after this? What am I? No, when I'm sitting here, I'm sitting here. So if your mind is pure, has less vasanas, then your mind is more quiet. So that is the goal of life, and that is the goal of the whole creation, is to reduce the vasanas, do service, and dedicate to the Lord. And whatever job you are doing, you do it to the best of your ability. This reminds me of another story of a mechanic and a doctor. So this doctor takes his Mercedes and, to the mechanic, and the mechanic works for about 20, 25 minutes. And he says, sir, your bill is 200. So he says, 200? That's too much. He says, well, you know, I went to the other surgeon the other day and he did a 20-minute surgery and he charged me 2,500. So what are you talking, 200? He charged me 2,000. So the doctor says, wait a minute. Okay, that's true, doctors charge more. Now you repaired my Mercedes, he says, yeah. He says, can you repair it with the engine running? With the engine running, you try to repair, you can't, right? But we repair the human body with the engine running. The heart is running, the lungs are running. So you cannot compare, you know, whatever work you are doing, you cannot say this work is better or that work is better. Every job is good. You do it to the best of your ability. And what is the difference between civilization and culture is when the surroundings are good, pure, that is civilization. When the inner is good or pure, that is culture. So civilization is the purifying the environment and culture is purifying inner. So when you say this person is very cultured, what it means is not that his education or not that his family background or upbringing, we talk about that. Culture is how this person is inside. And civilization is, when they say he's a civilized individual, is how this person is outside in dealing with others. So when they say that this is a very civilized country, means people are good, people are nice. So that is what we have to develop, the inner purity. Do, you know, make my mind pure, make my mind loving, make my mind compassionate, and make my surroundings clean, my dealings with others. So that is the essence of what my duty is, what my karma is, what is karma yoga. And as we said, everybody is important. Everybody is equally important. And we actually went to Tibet about 10 years ago, 15, 10, 12 years ago with Swami Ishwaranandaji. I think some of you went. Now it has changed a lot. First of all, Tibet has been totally invaded by the Chinese. They have taken it over and they have built roads and, you know, putting industries and shops and factories. But when we went about, I think, 12 or 15 years ago, first of all, there were absolutely no roads. There was no road at all, except for maybe in the capital. Outside the capital, there was nothing. It was just mud and mountains. So you had to go off-road. So we had these jeeps that were just driving off-road. And how these people knew where to go, they would drive whole day for 60, 70, 80, 100 miles. And I'm like, how do they know? There is no landmarks. There is no road, no sign, no nothing. They just know and they go. So there were no roads. You go to the people, they're all monks. I'm talking in the, you know, this 15 years. All the Tibetans were either monks, or those who were not monks were just sitting in their house, you know, smoking ganja and not working. There was no industries there. There was hardly any little bit of farming they'll do in a minimum, little bit of farming, no industry, no roads, no hospitals, nothing. The country was, no, there's no soldiers. And that's why when China took over them, all they did was just decided we're going to walk into Tibet. And they just walked in without firing a single shot and took the whole country. Why? Because everybody was a monk. Everybody was sitting and meditating. Your country cannot work like that. You cannot have everybody sitting and meditating. That's when the society goes down. There was no facilities. There was nothing there. They don't make a single thing. Now, of course, it has gone for the worse because Chinese have taken over. But the point is that every person is important. Every person. If everybody decides to meditate, what's going to happen to the country? In fact, people always used to ask Swamiji, how about in the whole world if everybody follows Krishna's advice and starts meditating? Swamiji says, it's not going to happen. It didn't happen in Krishna's time. It didn't happen in Ram's time. It didn't happen in Jesus's time. It's not going to happen in your and mine. There's always an infinite variety. But if people do not do what is required, then that's what happens. And that's exactly what happened to Tibet. So they say that just as in the body, now there is a liver, there is heart, there is brain, there is lungs. Each one does its duty, right? The brain is thinking, the lungs are exchanging oxygen, the heart is pumping, the liver is doing the, you know, like a chemical factory, converting carbohydrates to proteins and all that. And each one is doing its job perfectly. Like we said, there are 4 billion cells and they're all working perfectly. Suppose the liver tomorrow decides, I'm tired of, you know, doing this, being the junkyard and exchanging chemicals. I want the glamorous job of pumping blood. Like, it can't, right? It can't. The liver has to keep doing its job of liver. Heart has to do its job of heart, lungs, the brain. So similarly, each and every one of us has been assigned in a particular spot where God has placed us. And where we are is a perfect place for us to evolve. Let us not try to do the duty of somebody else. We're not saying that one should not grow or be successful. But wherever you are, say, Lord, you know, there's a very beautiful bhajan. Tehi bid rakhe sham, vehi bid rahiye. Wherever the Lord has put you, Bhagwan, I'm happy. I'm happy and I'll do my best. So work with your body. Let it be under the control of the mind. You know, mana shasthani indriyani, in the 15th chapter, Sri Krishna says that the mind is the one that controls all the senses. So let the senses not go on their own. You know, let the eyes see whatever they want, or the tongue eat whatever it wants, or the tongue speak whatever it wants, or hands or feet, you know, overwork. That's why Sri Krishna says, live a life of moderation, control your sense organs with the mind, and then control the mind under the intellect. So a person who is doing his duties, dedicated to the Lord, living a life of moderation, living a life of self-control, can achieve the highest goal of human life, and that is become one with the Lord. And that's why they say the 4 paths are like the 4 roads that go up the peak. There is the path of karma, path of bhakti, path of jnana, and then path of jnana or meditation. The goal of all 4 is the same. Now, some may be a little slower. There might be a curvy road, or some might be a straight shot going up. So the paths are different, but the goal of all is one. And as I said in the beginning, a while back, all 3 have to be practiced together. You have to practice love for God. You have to serve God, and you have to know God. All 3 are equally important. One person may be more bhakti oriented, where, okay, I like to get up in the morning and pray. Another one said, I'm a karma yogi. I want to go out and work. I want to serve the world. And another person says, I like to sit and, you know, read about God and know who God is. So you may be bhakti pradhan or gyan pradhan or karma pradhan, but ultimately all 3 are required. And the goal is one and the same. But depending on your physical and mental capability, somebody is very good at working. Okay, you do karma yoga. Somebody has a lot of emotion. Love God. Okay, love God. You know, pray to Him. And another one is intellectually advanced. So the path of knowledge would be for him. So that's why Sri Krishna says, find out what you are good at and then do that. Same way for your children. Find out what they are good at and then encourage them to do that. Do not force them to do something that they are not inclined to do, that they are not qualified or that they are not good at. You may even train them to become a, you know, doctor or engineer or anything. But if his interest is not in that, he'll be miserable. And we'll talk a little more about that next week. But this is kind of the essence where everything has to be dedicated to God. And that is my goal. Because why? Because I have to reach that Lord in this life itself. Not in next life or 5 lives from now or 10 lives. This life itself. I have the Gita. I have the knowledge of Sri Krishna. I have Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, his commentary to guide us. So this life itself, I should reach the highest. Now, here and now. Realization is not next life or 10 years from now or after retirement. Today, now, here I want it. That should be the amount of mumukshutvam, the amount of, you know, desire for knowledge.
So how does this, I don't see how, you know, doing my duty, if it's, you know, a service doing.
Right. So I think there are 2 aspects. One is what my daily work is. You know, that is my duty. I have to get up and take a bath, keep myself clean, and go and do my job, do, you know, for a lady maybe to cook for the children and, you know, get them ready for school. So those are my daily duties. But along with that, first of all, that duty I should do as a service to the Lord. Like I said, that young boy, you know, standing in Taco Bell, you know, he every customer who comes, he leaves happy. So that is one, that I do my duty to the best of my ability as a dedication to the Lord. That's number one. The second aspect of karma yoga is that I must set aside some time to work where I don't get anything in return, where I don't expect anything. That is called unselfish work, dedicated. And both of them should be dedicated to the one Lord, who is the one has given me the ability to work. So working for myself and my family, but remembering the Lord constantly, and then working for others, are both aspects of karma yoga. And maybe at a certain stage in your life, you're not in a position to help others. You work so hard, you have so many hours, you can just only work from morning to night. But as you evolve, as you get progress, as you get financially more stable, then it is your duty to share with others. So that is also part of karma yoga, working for myself and working for others. And you can always do that on the weekend, you know, in the evenings. So take aside some time to serve. So together, that is karma yoga, working for myself, working for others, and then dedicating to the Lord. So there are three aspects of karma yoga. Three aspects: doing my duty as a service of God, working unselfishly for others, and then always remembering and having no ego, having no sense that I am the doer, that I and my should go away. So the doership should go away. That is karma yoga. If you say, I did it, then automatically it becomes, the Lord worked through me. It's the same thing. The action is the same, but the motive, the intention is so different. And I'm doing it as a service of the Lord, as opposed to I am doing it for myself. So when the moment I and mine come, that's when the ego comes. You know, I am somebody great. I am somebody, you know, wonderful and all that. Does that answer it?
Is there a higher aspect of karma yoga?
No, it's all high. All three are equally high. Once you are dedicating to the Lord, whatever you're doing, you could be sweeping the floor, you're still karma yoga if you're remembering the Lord. No, there is no higher and lower. Every action can be elevated to the highest. So there is no higher or lower. No. Karma yoga is just one. Like in bhakti, there may be degrees. You know, somebody has little love for Lord, somebody has extreme love for Lord, where everything he's dedicating. So there may be degrees. But when you're doing an action dedicated to God, it doesn't matter what you're doing. In knowledge also, somebody may have more knowledge, somebody may have less knowledge. The clarity may be different. But I think in work, once you are dedicating to God, it automatically becomes worship, I think. I don't know. Is anybody? Pankaj, what do you think? Yeah. I think there's no degrees in karma yoga.
So you do everything with passion?
Yes. Do it with passion. Do it with firmness. That's why In the qualities, it says, even in the qualities, the dhriti, you know, persistence and passion. And enjoy what you're doing. See, make work pleasure instead of making work a drudgery. If you think, oh, why do I? If you don't look forward to Mondays, then you shouldn't be in that job. You should look forward to Monday. Oh, Lord, I'm so happy I'm going to go out and serve you. Or if you wake up in the morning and say, oh, again, I have to cook. Or if I invite guests and say, why did I invite them? Why am I cooking for them? Then you should not have invited. If you invite, then you say, God is coming to my house, or God is in my husband, and God is in my children. And if I'm cooking for them, I'm cooking for God. So every action you should look forward to. You should enjoy your work. Otherwise, life becomes miserable. If you think it is a burden, then, so no, it should be passion and should be joy. Life should be fun. And partly take life as a play, as a joke, as a as a natak. It's just happening as a drama, as a movie. Don't take it too seriously. Then only you get too caught up. If you think life is a great big joke, then everything is a joke. That's true. I read a lot of jokes, by the way. You know that. You can tell from my... And that's why it's very good to read jokes, because then you smile. You wake up happy. I used to actually buy so many joke books. I have so many. Now, of course, you can go on the internet and all. But in the good old days, I have stacks of jokes. Plus, I used to need them for my class, because I had to find jokes for each class. But it's good. You know, make life fun.
This is the only yoga which is like a bank deposit,
right?
Which will grow and go with you. Other yogas like Dhyan Yoga and others, you have to restart or work all over again in next birth. But this is like a bank deposit that will go with you.
True. True.
This birth or next birth, it will come somehow. Somewhere.
Yes. But the spiritual evolution you have reached, yeah, that will go with you. But you're right, the knowledge you have to start again from ABCD and all that. Yes, you're absolutely right. But whatever spiritual progress you have made, you will continue from that. But you're right, the karmas definitely go with you. Yeah, thank you. That's a good point.
At our level, the spiritual
right.
is much higher.
Much higher. Why much higher? We can also, no, really, I used to first of all think, you know, they are so much. But why can't we? You know, we have the same knowledge. They read the same Bhagavad Gita. Swami Chinmayananda studied Bhagavad Gita from Tapovan Maharaj. So if we are studying Bhagavad Gita, why can't we apply like that? But I'm not saying that we can be at the level of Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Jesus and all. But why not we also in this life itself evolve? Let us grow. Let us reach as far as we can at least. As far as we can, ultimately, if it happens, fine. If not, you know, next life will continue. But do not wait for next life. Work from now itself.
And it goes back to when we were talking about how children, some kids are more evolved than
yes.
others. So their past spiritual identity carries on
right.
to their lives next lives.
Absolutely, right. That's why they, at age 8 or 9, they're already you know, spiritual masters. Like Mozart was playing piano at age 5, you know, composing operas. Shankaracharya was writing commentaries on the Upanishads when he was 8 or 9 years old. So it's all from previous birth. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.